Okay, it's now 1:30. We're calling this finance meeting to order. We have a heavy agenda, so let's see if we can keep it rolling a little bit. Present are Council President Bullock, Councilpersons Kilpatrick, Hollins, Cartier, Diller, Retta. I'm George Smiley, co-chair of Finance. Mr. Hohlleiter will be taking the minutes due to the unnecessary absence of my legislative aide to take care of her brat. I know she listens to these meeting minutes after every one, so that's for her, for taking off. I've been advised Councilman Tackett and Councilman Weiner will not be here. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to discriminate. Brats, she has two, one of each sex. I don't want to discriminate. So, first, can I have a move? What's your pleasure on the minutes, the October 13th meeting?
Motion.
Is the motion to approve? Second. Is there a second? There's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Those not voting? Okay, the minutes have been approved. First on the agenda, resolution number 15-184, approving the refund of overpayments of taxes created by an assessment appeal. This goes back some time to when Chrysler actually had possession of the site, and there had been an appeal as to the property taxes there. So this is an assessment by them that has been through the process, and they've negotiated a settlement. So, Chief Minister, I'll go to the things you're pressing on $20,000. So, the refund amount is a sum of $26,502.50. I'm sure that will help them. So, is there any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Councilman Bell is with us. Thank you very much. Next on the agenda. 15-185, authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract for document technology systems for annual maintenance contract for the recorder of deeds software for the Office of Technology in the amount of $53,000. And this is for maintenance and computer software. It's the annual standard maintenance and support fee for the recorder of deeds system. Any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none, move on. R15-186, authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract for Delmarva Power for natural gas infrastructure installation at Rockwood Park for Department of Special Services in the amount of $194,773.05. I'm going to include with this, with Council's approval, resolution number 15-187. Authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract for Delmarva Power for natural gas infrastructure installation at Carousel Park for the Department of Special Services in the amount of $73,184.19. I had some discussion on this. I want to know where we were going, and quite honestly, what it is these two facilities currently use oil heat. There are issues during the winter with getting oil there. As a matter of fact, we've had a couple winters where we actually couldn't get the oil delivery in there, and some of the structures actually went without heat, as well as the emissions from the oil heat at Rockwood has tended to have some adverse effects on the structure and some of the items housed there. So that's the reason for the changeover to natural gas. So, any Councilman Cartier?
Yes. This question would go to both of these facilities, conversions of natural gas. So, I'd just like to direct a question from someone in special services. So it's the position of Delmarva Power. What we're doing is we're piping to some sort of existing mains that they have. We're essentially providing the lateral connection into these park facilities.
So maybe special services, yes, we're running in from a lateral from the street all the way up to where each of the locations on both facilities would be metered to the buildings. At Rockwood, there's five locations. At Carousel, I think there's three.
Okay.
I would just comment, it would be nice if you could do away with the meter part.
I think
just my observation. Okay, any further questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. Next on the agenda is Councilman Sheldon's present.
Thank you.
Next we'll go to R15-188, authorizing the execution of one purchase order contract for SBA Network Services, LLC, for the installation of telemetry and all supporting antennas and equipment at the tower off of Marl Pit Road in Middletown, Delaware, for the Department of Special Services in the amount of $55,210. And the purpose of this is to support the Odessa Paramedic Station project. Any questions from any members of council? Anything from the public? Okay. For those of you new to the audience that think this is running smoothly, fireworks will be at 6:30 when council actually starts. Next on the agenda, we have 15-099, amend the grants budget, appropriate $250,000 in anticipated program income to the Property Maintenance Revolving Fund. Not saying Mr. Tackett, I will go to Mr. Retta.
Thank you. What this is, the Finance Committee and myself, we talked about this. Actually, I talked to George about it more so than I did John Cartier. What it was we had a rash of homes that we're tearing down and renovating and a lot of property maintenance, and we at the end of this month, if we didn't appropriate this money, we would be out. And some of the homes that had fires and have to be torn down, we couldn't be able to do it because of there wasn't any money involved. And also the maintenance program that we go out and take care of the outside of the homes, cutting the grass and a lot of structure on the outside of the building. We were doing that, and we appropriated money, I guess it was probably right before the budget, around April or so, and that's low too. So we're running out of money faster than we're bringing in. Okay. So that's basically it. Any questions on that?
Councilman Cartier.
I don't have a question. I just want to make a point that, and to also get finance and comment on this. We go and appropriate this additional money to this very valuable program, which removes dangerous, hazardous, and nuisance structures, you know, mostly residential structures throughout the county, which, you know, degrade neighborhoods, cause safety hazards. Once we expend the money to abate or remove the hazardous property, we then convert the expense into a lien against the property, and as the property is purchased or otherwise transferred, we recover the abatement or you know, cost for the removal of the hazardous structure. So if any our
Mike to finance, that is correct, Councilman. And one thing I've done a little research here with land use. When we do lien, and of course we wait for the sale, it's a sale, everybody's for that, but if you went back to 2006, we technically have an outstanding receivable there of about a little over $1 million. So that's why you have to continually come back asking for the additional funds, because the revenues aren't coming in, they're sitting out there as a receivable until the land is sold. So there's a possibility probability in the spring will probably be back here again. If the receivable account continues to go up, obviously the funds are not going to the account.
Well, I got a newspaper article where you can find $400,000. Councilman Retta?
Yeah, I'd just like to add to what Mike said. it takes us a few years to get our money back. And the few years that we're waiting to get our money, in the meantime, every year we're putting out more money. So we're always chasing our tail. We're always behind. We're never getting up close to where we should be.
Well, I would just like to comment that, I know it's costing us more than we had anticipated, but I think if, and I understand the shortfall, but I think the shortfall closes, the gap closes, if we take a look at the diminishing number of times that code enforcement gets called out, police have to go out to this vacant property because it's now boarded up. So I think it doesn't come even, but I think it does close some, and if nothing else, it relieves my telephone of a few dozen calls a month. Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
So this $250,000 comes out of reserves? It's not part of the budget?
No, it's anticipated income.
This is anticipated income, not the reserves at this point, because there's always an anticipated income. I think it's $800,000, which is about $500,000 over the budget.
So before we go to reserves, there could come a time where we have to say, we're done for the rest of this budget year.
Okay.
Or go to reserves.
Or go to reserves.
Yes.
Okay.
Anything further from Councilman Cartier?
Yeah, just a point for further clarification. When the liens are satisfied on the outstanding abatement on a property, do we take that money and revolve it back into this?
Yes, sir. My two finance, yes, that would be correct, Kevin.
Goes back into revolving fund.
Okay. Any further questions from council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. Ordinance number 15-101, amend the grants budget, realign federal funds of $46,158.08 in the FY15 Home Investment Partnership Program, Home Grant, which is administered by the Department of Community Services. Looking for a volunteer? Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is to realign funding, as mentioned in the title. This program is for rehabilitation and acquisition. I will yield to the General Manager of Community Services to explain the necessity for the realignment.
Eileen Latham, Department of Finance Officer for Community Services. This ordinance realigns the FY15 and prior year funds so that we can spend them according to the action plan that was submitted to HUD in May. Because of changes in HUD accounting regulations, instead of carrying forward monies forward to the current budget, we're required to keep the old funds separate.
Anything to make it more difficult? Anything further from any members of council? Anything from the public? Thank you very much. Ordinance number 15-102, amend the grants budget, realign $593,367.74 of federal funds and deauthorize $12,684.84 in program income within the FY2015 Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, which is administered by the Department of Community Services. Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Similarly, we're going to be realigning again, and also in this particular case, we're going to deauthorize, and similarly, I would yield us for further explanation. I'm kicking the ball down the chain.
All right.
Department of Finance Officer for Community Services. Same thing as the home, except for this one, we're reducing the amount to what we actually collected in project income in FY15.
Anything further from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. 15-104, amend the grants budget, appropriate $22,000 in funds from the Centers for Disease Control through the Nemours Health and Prevention Services to the FY2016 Partnership to Improve Community Health Pitch Grant to be administered by the Newcastle County Department of Community Services. Councilwoman Diller?
Yes, we had actually had an update on this at the previous community services meeting. This is a reduction in the grant. We had hoped for about $36,000. You know, community services found out it's reduced to $22,000, but this aligns the grant with where it's supposed to be in the budget. So,
anything from any members of council? Anything from the public? Hearing none. Ordinance number 15-105 to amend Newcastle County Code Chapter 38 Utilities Article 2 Sewers and Sewage Disposal Division 38.02.500 Sewer Services Charges regarding the user classification categories used to identify Class B general industrial / commercial users for sewer billing purposes. Councilman Sheldon.
Yeah, I was going to talk on this, but I'm going to do like Mr. Hollins did. I'm just going to kick it to my people here.
Jay, if you're kicking it to Mr. Powers, you better punt a little harder.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm going over top of him to special services.
Okay.
Mike Harris,
special services. I've got nobody to kick this to, so I guess.
Run for the goal line, my friend.
We talked about this a few meetings ago. I did a small presentation on it, but this is basically just a housekeeping issue. Chapter 38, sewer utilities. It basically, we use the people's SIC codes to determine which sewer class they should be in and how much they pay for their sewer billing. This updates the 1972 SIC code to brings us up to the 1987 version, which is the most recent version of the SIC codes. And it also, we use an internal policy. It was called the SIC code land use correlation list. We've updated that to a special services policy. So it's really a housekeeping thing, nothing.
So basically some of the existing codes
are
maybe outdated, not enforced, so you have to replace them with the proper codes that are in effect now.
The codes really didn't change themselves. We just are updated to the most recent.
Same, here we are. Okay. Anything from any members of council? Anything from the public? Okay, hearing none. Next, we have on the agenda a presentation from the County Investment Consultant. Mr. Coop, do you want to
Mike Coop Finance.
Introduce this.
I have our new investment consultant from UBS here, Mark Jagowski and David Sears, to give a presentation on where we'll be going with the investments, looking for investment manager. Jim Boyle's going to set us up on the screen down there.
Okay.
And Ed Morwick will be handing you out the presentation right here.
Mr. Coop.
Yes, sir.
For clarification for the record, because unless I missed it, nothing official has been brought forward.
Thank you.
So my question is there a current signed contract in place? Are we settled on that? Is that issue settled?
The contract is going through the final dotting of the I's, crossing the T's through law, but under our condition at Newcastle County, we're allowed to, the law department allows us to step forward with a purchase order in the amount no greater than, I guess, $49,000 to allow them to start working while the I's are being dotted and the T's are being crossed.
So there is no signed contract?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's too.
But there is a purchase order.
There is a purchase order. Okay. Sound like my wife with her credit card. Okay. In case, I know you've been following along, just each time before you speak, identify yourself for the record, please.
Sure. This is Mark. That's Mark Shigoski with UBS. I'm the Senior Institutional Consultant. I want to thank you guys, ladies and gentlemen, for having us here. The contract, we wanted the contract in place before we came in, but because of the purchase order now coming for you, so we'll go through what the portfolio looks like, who we are, so you know who we are. We hope to come before this group probably quarterly if possible, so you know what's going on. I'm with UBS. I'm with David Sears, who's one of my partners. He's an institutional consultant also. So on the first page, which is the agenda, page one. It's up on the screen if you can get it.
Hold on, we're having a little technical difficulty here. I'm going to get some Boyle here to help you.
Yeah, that's what happens when you don't have a contract. You got nobody to call for service.
Chairman Smiley, just so we're time constraints, how much time do we have? Or do we want to go through this?
Well, we don't have a meeting following this, but if we can keep it around 15.
Okay,
we'll get through it. That doesn't mean you have to drag it, but because we can do that with questions when you're done, trust me.
All right. We can make it collegial. You can ask questions. Mark Shigoski is speaking. He has questions as we go through this.
Just
the first page.
I'm only going to speak for me, just so if we can keep it at street level so I understand what you're saying, we'll be good to go.
I'll do that.
Okay, thank you.
So what we're going to go through real quickly is who we are at UBS in terms of the consulting group, the services we have provided and will be provided via the contract to the county, what our manager research process looks like, so you know what type of research goes into the other people that will be coming in to run the portfolio. We'll put a sample manager profile, so you know what kind of due diligence is done on the portfolios. And then we're actually going to go through the current portfolio evaluation as of September 30th. And we have numbers to yesterday's close also. So first of all, most of you have probably heard of UBS. We have a substantial office in Wilmington, both on the trust side and the private wealth side. We're with a group within UBS called UBS Institutional Consulting. We're the only group within UBS, North and South America, that can bind the firm contractually to our balance sheet, which means if we do something that's not appropriate or out of line or there's an error made, not only do you get covered by our errors and omissions insurance, which is substantial, but you also have the balance sheet of one of the largest institutions that manages money in the world, actually the largest manager of money in the world. Within the UBS Institutional Group, we are not allowed to use any UBS products, so you will not see any UBS products in here whatsoever. I should point out that within the Institutional Consulting Group, there's only 100 of us, whereas you might know UBS from the private wealth side that there's 7,000 financial advisors, but there's only 100 of us that are allowed to do this. And where this came from, where our relationship began, and I'll go through for those of you that may know, there was a firm called Kidder Peabody, one of the firms that went under in the 1990s. We had a very substantial corporate and municipal bond investment banking group, and what they wanted were experts going out and working with groups like this. They did not want financial advisors coming in and not being trained at this. So we formed a group called Prime Asset Consulting, that some of you may have heard of, which then when UBS took over, Payne Webber and Kidder Peabody, we formed this group. So we basically look at this as if we're your off-balance sheet staff, and we'll go through what we've done with the staff at the county level in a couple pages. But within the UBS Institutional Consulting Group, there's 100 people, as I mentioned. There's 30 of us that are senior institutional consultants. I am one of the 30 senior institutional consultants. Our specialty is everything from municipal finance to corporate finance, foundations and endowments. So if you turn to the next page, my background, if you guys want to know who you're working with. I am one of the 30 senior institutional consultants. I've been at this for 34 years. This Friday, that turns into 35 years I've been in this business. Prior to coming into this business, I actually was on the public side. I was the assistant finance director of one of the largest municipalities in Missouri. I also was the finance director of the Office of State Courts Administrator, which was the Supreme Appellate Circuit Courts of the state of Missouri. I hold a Master of Science with honors from the Harry S. Truman School of Government, which is based at the University of Missouri. I also graduated with an undergraduate degree in political science and computer science from Rutgers College, which was the college back then with distinction. My mother likes this part. I've been in Barron's 100, which means the top 100 financial advisors in the United States for multiple years. I'm also on the Financial Times of London top 400 advisors, so I have some background in doing this. David, who's sitting next to me, who loves numbers more than anybody, is one of the youngest institutional consultants ever at UBS. He's been with us since 2007. He does most of the portfolio construction, asset allocation, and reporting. He is a certified financial planner, as well as from the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. He's a certified investment management analyst and also a chartered retirement plan specialist. Not to be outdone by me, this past year he got into the National Association of Plan Advisors 2015 Young Guns list, which means on retirement plans, David is one of the top 40 under 40 people to go to if you need to have that done. He holds his BS from Rutgers University. He's Phi Beta Kappa graduate in economics and finance, and he serves on a number of boards in the Kingston area.
This is David Sears with UBS. The slide on page 7 is an overview of the institutional consulting group at UBS. So the committee or the council will be dealing with Mark and myself. But behind the scenes, we do have a substantial team that helps us deliver highly customized solutions for our institutional clients. So this chart outlines the team, starting on the left, which is, we'll call it your local team. And then over as you go to the right, it's all the support that goes behind the research and the due diligence that goes in, that's involved in our services. So the middle column doesn't apply alternative investments, but the two columns to the right do, manager research and wealth management research. Basically, if you total the manager research column, there's 16 individuals that do nothing but scour the universe of investment managers or money managers, trying to find the best of the best for us to ultimately be able to recommend for our clients. So those managers I'll get into a little bit more detail later, but this is an overview of the resources. Then on the right hand side, this would be more capital markets, where is the world going type of research, interest rates, forecasts, economic forecasts, things like that. So the advantage of having UBS being a global wealth manager is that we do get to tap into some very experienced people on these teams to help guide our recommendations. And Mark mentioned this, but want to reiterate, is that we do act as a fiduciary, a co-fiduciary with regards to our investment advice. That's explicitly stated in our contract. Okay, so there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And not only that, but that fiduciary guarantee is backed by one of the strongest balance sheets in the world. And if you compare us to the global banks, we are the strongest, measured by something called Tier 1 Capital. But I think it's important to know that you know, our recommendations are backed by, you know, a strong financial firm.
One of the things David just said, once we get started with the contract and we come before this council and for the finance committee, when we show you the returns in a couple of pages, you will see there's going to be a spot on there that will show all income that we receive, and it'll be by a contract what we're allowed to make, and it'll be every single month you'll see exactly what we got paid. We're not allowed to collect any money from any vendors. We can't even take golf balls or go any place with any of the vendors. That's in the contract. Okay, so from the fiduciary standpoint, every single month you'll know exactly what the cash flow was to UBS. David just put up our client list. I'd like to put this up. This is, UBS has a major client list. These are the clients we've dealt with for 30 years plus, right? And the reason there's asterisks on there, when David first started, he came in to me and said, so how long have you worked with this client? How long have you worked with that client? And it became apparent that we had never thought of it before, but we have a very long life with clients that we've dealt with. Some of these clients have been with us for 30 years. The city of Winston-Salem, which is a AAA rated municipality, and to run like a corporation, City of Columbia has been 30 years. And you can see, what we like about our book of business is that it goes across different industries and municipalities. And the benefit there is, if we have Church & Dwight, which is Arm & Hammer Baking Soda and Trojan Products, drive us to do something for them, that falls through the rest of the books. So the county also has the advantage that when we change something on a report for a major client, it also falls down to the county level, all right? It also gives us great buying power. We also will say, if you want to talk to any of the clients for reference, let us know who you want to talk to on the list, and we'll give you the phone number and the person to talk to, and that's a good thing for us to be able to say. In terms of review the services that we're going to do, that we have, I had mentioned we are off balance sheet staff. One of the things we've added for the county finance department is you have online capability to everything that we're looking at, okay, on real time. Returns are available through the previous day's close. You have the general ledger, which is able to be downloaded, and so much so that we're your off balance sheet staff that when we first met, before we transferred assets in, we sat with most of the finance staff and accounting staff, and we went through what the transfer was going to look like. Then we went into one of your rooms that have computer teaching capabilities, and we went online and showed where everything was. David or I have been down here a number of times working with various people on the accounting staff and in the finance department, going over a number of different reports and also brainstorming of the best way to do what we're doing. Within the contract, we're going to do the initial investment policy statement. We'll review the investment policy statement on an annual basis, and that's via contract. We'll do strategic policy allocation studies on a quarterly basis. I should say one of the things that's available online, which is going to be very helpful, is we actually have a cash flow analysis that's available 1 year looking out, and now we've been working with the finance staff on getting your cash flow needs on the assets that we're using so we can match up the cash flow we're throwing off with the cash flow of the county. I think that might be one of the first times that's been done. The asset allocation will be active. It's not going to be traded, but if we have to make a change, because we all know the economics of the world has changed, we've been in a near zero based interest rate environment now for almost 5 or 6 years. The performance will be delivered, audited every quarter, but you're able to see it every single day if you want on a monthly basis. Finance department gets it. David or I are talking to Mike Coop and the staff probably at least once a week to go over things. You'll have investment manager evaluation reports, so you know the due diligence is there. The searches we'll do as needed. We'll attend investment committee meetings or the council meeting, whichever you prefer. We'll do education if you want us to bring in an economist or somebody to the board or the council, we can do that. All trades and the custody will be done at UBS as part of one fee. Just so you're aware, your assets are segregated as if they're sitting in a trust department. So if UBS went out of business tomorrow, you'll be able to pull your assets through at any bank or brokerage house that is a member of what's called DTC, or the Depository Trust Corporation. So the assets sit every single day in the name of the county.
So this is David Sears, UBS. I'll just be brief, but we wanted to include a little bit of how we evaluate the investment managers that we ultimately allocate the funds to be invested. So this page 10, outlines some of the factors that go into the process. So a lot of the factors are qualitative in nature, so we're looking at the organization, quality of personnel, what their philosophy is on investing money, their process, risk management, quality of research, so how intellectual, how smart are these people, and looking ultimately at their consistency over time of delivering results, and then their performance. So we're going to actually go into an example of a strategy profile in a little bit, but this is an overview of kind of where we start, and then this upside down triangle gives you an idea. Ultimately, under our services, we're not taking any discretion, so all of our recommendations would be presented and then ultimately approved on by the committee or the board. And so we start off basically sorting through a very large universe of managers, and if I isolate that just to fixed income or bonds, it's about 100 that we've approved at UBS. Okay, now within that 100, there's different strategies. Some are shorter in maturity, some focus in, you know, high yield, which right now is not allowed in the portfolio via the investment policy statement. And so we narrow it down to really come up with the mix of managers that are going to give us the risk characteristics, the income goal, the volatility, all those things, and this kind of outlines how we get to that process. So I alluded to the fact that we wanted to show you an example of the research. So this is just a sample. I mean, it's a real, and you're not going to be able to see the numbers there, but for those, I'll walk you through this page, a couple pages. So this is one manager on our platform, one of those 100. Okay. So as you notice, it's not a UBS manager. It says Madison Investment Advisor. So Mark alluded to the fact that we have no UBS products, meaning UBS is not physically investing the assets. We're having third-party managers do it. This particular manager is out of Wisconsin. They manage almost $15 billion. It's been doing so since 1992. If you were to read this recap, which I'll sum it up for you, the one takeaway and the one thing that makes this particular manager different is that they manage something called duration. So if the average bond market has a 5-year maturity, they specialize in forecasting interest rates and position their portfolio accordingly. All right, so I'm not going to get into it now, but that's unique. A lot of managers don't do that. A lot of managers focus on the other side. They focus on finding the best credit research and buying certain bonds that way. So this is an example of a unique manager that's one of many that we could choose from for this particular portfolio or a sleeve of the portfolio. You can't see it really if you're sitting far away, but the next page, page 14, these are some of the statistics on this particular manager. And I've highlighted up there something that says up capture ratio and down capture ratio. Basically, this says that when the bond market goes up in value, this manager captures 69% of that upside. So actually they underperform on the upside. In down markets, this manager captures 63% of the downside. Okay, so it's less volatile than the average bond portfolio, is basically what that's saying. So if, as consultants, we want to be defensive because, say, let's say we assume or we think interest rates are going to be increasing over the next couple of years, this may be a manager we talk about because of their defensive characteristics. Now, we have other managers on our platform that are more aggressive, okay? So we can complement the two, but this is an example of basically a manager that has taken less risk than the index and been able to have consistent positive return.
I'm just going to translate to the upside downside a little differently. So what it means is if the market was to move up a dollar, we're only going to make 60 some cents with this manager in general. If the market was to go down by a dollar, we're only going to lose 60 cents. We're going to lose 60%. Whereas other managers will lose 100% of what the market is. So it'll match exactly. So that's what the upside downside is. The other thing I want to throw in is that because this is an institution and we view it as an institution, the people we're going to be working with, and when you hire us, you're hiring us and UBS. When you hire the managers, you're hiring the people. Every one of the managers, including the one that UBS approves, we have a contract with that we do due diligence on. David mentioned it to the point that we have auditors going in there physically on a regular basis during the year, all right, and audit their books and their executions. because what we don't want is if GE Capital goes in and they buy a bunch of bonds, we want the same price as GE because they're buying billions, we're buying millions. So it's the average price of the day that everybody gets the same fill. The contract also reads with them, if a key personnel member leaves within 24 hours, we need to know. So that we use PIMCO, you guys may know that name, there was a gentleman named Bill Gross who was running it. He was the person who made the decisions, or seemed to from the outside. If he was to leave, we'd know within 24 hours, or key personnel down to administrative assistants. We don't know what each person's value is to that company. So we will know when we do, okay?
And just to finish up on this manager, another unique aspect is that they are A or better in credit quality. You see that at the bottom left. So no triple B, although triple B is considered investment grade and allowed by your investment policy, but this allows us to maybe, you know, again, be more high quality if we wanted to. So that's another unique aspect.
Okay, so we're going to go through what the portfolio looks like now. Again, these reports are available with one day lag, so this report you could do today's numbers, we can get to you tomorrow, we can email it over. Most of these sheets are available online internally here now, so you can actually look at the returns and a lot of these pages. And David can go through what we've done, but we've been in, a protection mode since we've been on this portfolio. We want to keep everything steady. This is money you can't replace until everything's put in place. So if you look at the first page, you'll see it at the top. It's mostly fixed income. Only 0.14 is sitting in cash right now. There's some dividend interest payments. We're 99.86% in fixed income. Of that, 46% is in government paper, and 49.41 is in investment grade paper or better via the investment policy at this point. Are there any questions at this point? I'm moving through this.
The reason that,
Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Cartier.
Yes. So this figure of $93,879,793, that's the general reserves of the county and the rainy day reserve, right? This figure.
Mike Coop, Finance. This is only what's in that portion of the portfolio. Remember, there's also probably about another 45.
Right.
So safely, that's right. With Wilmington Trust managing that portion. So this is not all.
Okay.
So that's a good point. We have not, because we don't have a contract, but we can't consult on the Wilmington Trust portion. That will be included. The assets will be sitting at Wilmington Trust, okay?
Okay.
But it will be consolidated on a monthly basis into our report, so we'll see them. That's a good point.
One follow-up question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So this figure of almost $94 million represents what assets of the county, financial assets? You're talking about a fund of $45 million, and this is like $95
million. Finance, yes, the overall reserve picture. We'll just say the overall reserve picture.
All right.
We include the Wilmington Trust at this.
So they're all part of the reserves
the overall,
of the county?
Yes,
the $45 million and the $94
million. Yes, the overall reserve numbers.
Okay, thank you.
And I do want to point out, this is Mark Chagosky, and I do want to point out on the Wilmington Trust side, because it's something we brought to the attention of the county. Wilmington Trust, the people running the money, are no longer owned by Wilmington Trust. They're acquired by M&T Bank, so it's a bank out of Buffalo that is currently running the money that is known as Wilmington Trust, for the record.
Okay, so page 22 shows you the history since the assets have been on the top left, you see that blue line, and there's a dotted line as well. The dotted line is the contribution, the blue line is the market value. They're very close because of the investment strategy has been very conservative, but what you see is the dips up and down, so that's representing a withdrawal of funds that's happened in the middle of or near your fiscal year end each year. Okay, and so you can see the funds come out, and then they come back in, and they come out and come back in. That's part of what we've been managing and what we will manage going forward, making sure that when the time comes and we get projections from the finance department that liquidity is needed, okay, the liquidity is there, and there's not unnecessary liquidating and selling, which probably is not the best thing to do in this type of a bond market. On the right-hand side, shows different time periods, month-to-date column, year-to-date column, 2014 and inception to date, beginning and ending values, and then investment gains, okay, and then a performance number. So if you just go to the year-to-date column, it's probably the most current relevant number to talk about. It says 0.64, that's the yield, the performance so far through the end of September. The portfolio has yielded 0.64 or $585,000. Okay, now we compare that to other parts of the bond market as a reference, which is what you'll see in the bottom right. These are called indexes, and there's all different types. The reason there's all different types is because there's a lot of ways to manage a portfolio. These are all bond indexes, and I'll just go through each one. You can just get an idea of, you know, how those indexes have done. The first one is 9 to 12 month treasuries. So government bonds, the most safe as far as credit quality, but yielding the least. Okay, so you see 0.32. Another one is U.S. short treasury. So that's actually even shorter. That's less than 6 months in maturity. T-bills or cash, 0.01. The Barclays Aggregate Bond Index. This is this is probably the most popular index, but it's most appropriate probably in your pension for the county, really when you're investing the bonds for much longer periods of time and the managers have longer durations or maturities, but it's on there. So actually, to give you an idea, that's up 1.13, but at one point this year, that index was down almost 1% because rates have moved up and down. It's more volatile than the current portfolio. Then you have the Barclays Government Credit 1 to 3 year. I would say that's a closer mix to how this portfolio is currently being managed. Okay, so if you look, you know, that's up 1.02 for the year. 2014, it was up 0.77. Then there's the high yield index. There's no high yield in this portfolio, but almost to show kind of what high yield would do to the portfolio to the volatility. You know, high yield is down almost 2.5% this year. And then lastly, the U.S. corporate is just corporate bonds, investment grade, okay, and they're up 1.6. So really, the two pieces of the portfolio that we think kind of are really predominantly invested are the bottom one, the U.S. corporate, 1 to 3 year, and the top one, the ones that we highlighted, the treasuries, because we're at almost 50% corporates, which is the limitation via investment policy, and the majority of everything else is in government type securities, whether that's Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, but really just the safest investments, very short maturity and mostly for liquidity purposes. So when funds need to be withdrawn, they're available and we don't need to sell anything. In fact, we haven't sold anything this entire year. Everything that's all the cash that's come due to the portfolio has been from maturing bonds.
Where David goes from that page to on that page, the reason we put the high yield on there was, and for the record, it's Mark Shigosky speaking from UBS. When we first got involved with the account, UBS got involved in February of 2013. David and our group did not get involved with the portfolio until late May when we started it. So when you go to the next page, you'll see there was high yield in this portfolio originally. Had we stayed with it, you would have been down on that portion of the portfolio about 2.6%. Right? So we go to the next page, the sources of the portfolio. When we took it over in 2013, this is a good way to show what happens having some high yield in the portfolio and also in an interest rate environment moving up. We didn't lose money on the portfolio. We lost market value during 2013. That was a rising rate interest rate environment and the type of instruments that the county was holding at that point. Since that time, we've taken them to the safer side of the investments.
And to give you an idea, like I mentioned, the Barclays Aggregate Bond Index, that's actually similar when the portfolio came in, that's how it was being managed, more towards that index, and then we kind of restructured and got more conservative as far as the maturity, and we'll talk to that. But basically, I would say the index, had we stayed the same in dollar terms, the portfolio would have been down four times as much, because if you look, minus 1.47 in 2013, versus minus 0.35. This page is important, page 24. Okay, this is the current structure of the portfolio. We highlighted some things up there, but basically, the way you measure interest rate risk in a bond portfolio is by duration, and that's measured in years. So that says the duration is 0.85, which means...
It's over in this corner.
Right.
Okay, down in here is what Dave was talking about. As a council or any committee, this is probably the page that you want to hold our feet to the fire the most. Plus, it's the investment policy statement, because this will show on one page the executive summary what the portfolio looks like. And Dave's just going to run through it quickly, and I'll throw some stuff in also.
Okay, this is David Sears, UBS. So 0.85 is the current duration, which means that the average, you're going to get all the money back in the portfolio if you did nothing in less than 1 year, to give you an idea. We really, you know, given the fact that we've been anticipating a contract and where we're going to be ultimately divvying out portions of the portfolio to managers, that's part of the reason why it's so short. Okay, we want things to be maturing as a strategy gets implemented. And the yield to maturity, if you did nothing and held everything to maturity, is 0.89. Okay, over on the right-hand side is the breakout of how it's invested, similar to that first page, okay? So there's corporates, there's treasuries, federal agencies, which are Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Bottom left is the credit rating. Okay, so there are no non-investment grade investments. And Mark, you want to talk about the not rated?
Well, let's go through two things. And I haven't gone through the council minutes, but there's two ways that people could come in and report this. If you go back to what David was talking about up in the upper left-hand corner, that top piece, which says the average coupon, we could say that this portfolio is earning 2.74%. That's the coupon on the treasuries and the corporates that we have. In reality, because these are bought in a market environment where the rates are low, there's something called amortization that we have to take into account. So your real cash flow is the yield that David cited on here, which is the 0.82 or 0.89%. But somebody could come in and say you're earning 2.74%, but when we adjust from an accounting standpoint, your real yield is less than 1% on here. What David just mentioned in the lower right-hand corner, it says not rated, right? After 2008, when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac almost went under, they were known as AAA-rated entities and their mortgage pools. They were public companies at that point. The common shareholders were wiped out, the debt holders were wiped out, and the preferred shareholders were. At that point, you may not have heard this term, but Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are not direct obligations of the U.S. government. They're called enterprise funds. So the government has the right to step in to save it, which is what happened in 2008. At that point, UBS decided, and we think rightfully so, to carry it as not rated with the tacit understanding that the U.S. government will back it. So the $5.7 million that we've seen not rated are Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae mortgage-backed securities that are legacies. We could see no reason to sell them because some of the coupons on them are 8% or higher. So why would we sell something at 8% that was well within the investment policy statements? We held on to those coupons. As they mature or get paid off, they will come off this sheet, but not rated doesn't mean that we have non-rated bonds. They're Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgage backs.
Okay, and so to pretty much finish up this analysis, this is a valuable, unique page. Page 26 is the risk. We've talked about the volatility and how it's defensive. This is actually showing it in numbers. Okay, so I'm going to refrain from getting too complicated here. I apologize, but the highlighted portion basically is if you looked at the 1 year period of this actual portfolio, we returned 0.8%, okay, just under a percent, like we are forecasting going forward. We measure volatility called in a number called standard deviation, where you see 0.28. Basically, what that says is that over the past year, the majority of the time, the return has been between 0.8 minus 0.28 and 0.8 plus 0.28. So basically a very narrow range, very stable. To compare it, the bond index, okay, has returned more because interest rates continue to come down. However, it's varied, the variance is much, much greater. Okay, and ultimately, you know, that goes against you when rates rise. And so this is ultimately the reason why our portfolio has been positioned so defensively. And so alpha is a measure of outperformance or underperformance. A positive number is outperformance, and you say, well, what do you mean you outperform? It's because alpha takes into account the amount of risk you're taking to get to the number. And so since we took such little risk to get that, it's showing a positive alpha. And I won't go further.
And I'll go through real quickly the way I understand it a little bit differently. When David just said that your portfolio is at 0.80 and the variance is 0.28 or the standard deviation, David hates when I do this because mathematically it's not 100% right. But if it's a 0.80 rate of return is what we expect on the portfolio, you can add basically 0.28 like 90% of the time, or minus 0.28 to that return. So it could be as high as 1.08 and as low as 0.80 minus 0.28. If we're just in the aggregate bond index, you could be up 2.94%, or you could be flat if you take 2.94 from the return. So taking more risk is for your return is your target projection. All right?
And the rest of the portfolio won't go through, but it's all the individual holdings. Yeah, so you can actually see.
Yeah, let me go through this. You actually, for the first time, are going to be able to see every single position in the reports. What's good here is if there's a corporate bond on here, like Progressive Insurance or some company that the county does not want to have investments in, you can give us a direction. You can tell the portfolio managers not to own it, and that will be taken off. In negotiations with somebody, you don't like what they're doing, you can make them, you know, do what you have to and say, we want to not invest in that portfolio. The county can say, we don't want it. We don't want 20 things blocked out. But a couple we have the most clients blocked out at one time or another. Okay? So to sum it up, if you go way back into the book on page 46, what we're going to be doing as your off-balance sheet staff and working with the finance department is basically we're your boutique group with the backing of an international and global firm. We're going to provide the investment policy statement, asset allocation, manager searches. The portfolio evaluation and metrics are available online now, so if you guys want to enter period when we're not here, it can be presented. We have tools for you on the asset allocation side. I think one other important thing, and you didn't have this in the past, is the portfolio review that you're going to get on a quarterly basis is based on a system called Informa. So we view this data as your data. We do not use a lot of UBS products, so we actually job out with a third-party vendor called Informa, which does most of the analytics for portfolio managers, corporations, on behalf of Newcastle County. So from the day our contract is signed, the data and the performance numbers belong to the county. So if we're not doing that job a month from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and you hire somebody new, you can actually maintain the database on Informa, so you have a legacy of all the returns for as long as you're on the Informa base. What we will do is once the contract is signed, we're going to get a letter from the finance area and go back to the previous vendor and ask for as much data as we can, and we're going to, the best of our ability, reconstruct the returns from that party and put that in our database. So that's one of the things we're doing by the contract. We're going to go back and evaluate the previous returns, put them into the database, and that belongs to Newcastle County from that day going forward. All right? You have our manager research group. David went through that. You're going to have financial and fiduciary acknowledgement from us. Fee transparency will be reported to the finance area once a month. And on a quarterly basis, it will be in the full report. And we went through everything is segregated. It all is in the name of the county. All right. Any questions?
Okay. Clear something up for me. I think I have it. I want to make sure, because I've raised this issue several times. You've assisted the county in redrafting the investment policies. But as I understand with this presentation, is those investment policies will be forwarded to the investment agencies that are, and then it becomes your part of your responsibility to oversee to make sure that they're adhering to those policies. So you don't either actually work by those policies, but you enforce them. You make sure that they're being followed. Am I hands on?
Mark Shigosky, that's absolutely
okay.
Correct.
Now, I heard a lot of stuff here that makes me feel good. But let's see how far it goes, because I'm now going to take you off the hook for a minute and go to the CAO and ask. There was a lot said here, first let me recognize that Councilman Tackett is with us. I think all of council was definitely on board with, and that is that once all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, if you get the contract, number one, the quarterly presentations, I'm definitely on board with. Let us know when you're ready. We'll get you on the agenda. Councilman Carey and I co-chair finance, and we can always make room to find out what the county's money's doing. But, Mr. Grimaldi, what I want to know is there was a lot of emphasis put on the availability of the information as to the county's investments and the policy and programs out there. But this isn't public information, correct? So I guess when the contract's signed, somebody's going to be given the guidelines, parameters, whatever, to be able to access this information. How does that go with this council? In other words, you're given, here's a website, here's your passcode, you go in and set up so you can review the information. This, the presentation makes it appear like 13 members of council would have access to that information. So my question to you is, I'm assuming that, have you gone that far yet as to what we would be able to access, what we wouldn't be able to access, how we would be able to, whether there's a way to set up to where a council member could call and get a 24-hour temporary password to go in and review things? I'm just asking because they've been kind enough to come here under PO, present to council. Lord knows we've discussed the UBS long enough that I don't want them to leave and then we find out the contract's signed, everyone has it. I go to my computer, I can't get in, I can't look at it, and the first thing is we got bad information. I just don't want us to start that way. So that's why I'm asking, because I assume that's going to be fall into your area of decision.
CEO David Grimaldi, first, forgive me, because I have non-contagious pneumonia right now. But
it's the rest of your issues we're concerned about, the pneumonia we can get medicine for.
I think ultimately it's going to be the finance department that has the access. Anybody outside of that, perhaps, can have read-only access. I think if I had it, I would have read-only access as well.
For me, that's all I'm looking for.
Whatever kind of reporting you guys would want.
I mean, I don't think he wants us going in. Anybody going in changing his numbers? So.
Yeah. When you say read only, nobody at the county level in the accounting department can enter orders or move funds.
Right.
So it's read only for everybody, other than the fact that the employees, for the first time, rather than waiting for a contract, you guys, anybody has a stock portfolio or a stockbroker, financial advisor, rather than having to wait for the confirmation to come in. It's on the system and they walk in the next month. Any of the general ledgers, as we would call it, is downloadable in Excel. Right? So from my perspective, if I'm sitting in your position, we can give out 5 passwords. Right? That's going to be used pretty much in the finance area. We already have been using it. We're saving staff time. I think Mike and David can speak to it. But we've actually saved time for people in terms of entering records and other things and doing analytics that we might give you a full run of the reports that you guys can have, and they can post those reports on a regular basis or as requested over to you on a regular basis. Or if you need it for a meeting, they can do it right away. Or you can, with David's permission, call us and we can also send up the reports. It's easy enough.
Okay, I just want to make sure that, you know where I'm going. I just want to make sure that we had the access if we want to go in and take a look at it, scan it, see what's doing
protocol
what.
Protocol internally has to be decided by the two gentlemen behind me.
Which is why I bypassed you and didn't put you on the spot. So please note, I do know one or two things. Councilman Cartier.
Yeah, I want to echo Councilman Smiley saying, first of all, this was a very illuminating presentation, and then we look forward to quarterly updates as we go further. The question I want to pose is, so this amount here of approximately $94 million is really the general reserve in the rainy day fund, as we call it. Now there's that other $45 million that's held by the Wellington Trust. And at some point you're going to combine those funds and there's one management of UBS, correct?
Wellington Trust is currently a manager. These other funds will also be managed by managers.
Right.
Consulting will oversee all the managers.
Okay.
So it's Mark Shigosky. It's not our intention to walk in as well. It's going to be evaluated just like every other manager.
Okay.
If they don't meet up to the standards that are necessary for the county, then they will go out for search for Wellington.
Okay.
There's no reason at this point for us to believe they're not going to be managed.
Okay. The second question I have then, the $45 million held by Wellington Trust, what is that fund all about? What is the origin of that fund? What is it dedicated to?
Mike, to finance. Here again, it's the what we call, we consider the big reserve cash pool.
Okay.
You look at the overall cash reserve pool. You have general, you have sewer.
Okay.
So it's both. It's not earmarked at this particular amount. You know, I know the term of always used reserve sewer, but you know, it's sewer and general.
Okay.
And when it started many years ago, Wellington Trust was managing some of them. Get the right name, but one of them was managing another 40-some million. Then along came the additional 40 or 50 million at some point, and that's where this 90 came from.
Okay.
But anyway, it's the overall cash that we look at.
Well, just add to that, when we came in, we looked at all of our investment advisors. Wellington Trust was also evaluated. The issue that we found with the high yield junk bonds, that was for one investment consultant. Wellington Trust was adhering to investment policy, so there was no reason to change. So the money's been there since.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take a minute to go back to the sources of portfolio value. And you mentioned, I believe you came on board in 2013.
May or so.
And there's been a lot of public discussion about the fact that you were awarded, at least given the consultant's opportunity. But you mentioned during the search for portfolio value that we potentially could have lost four times what we lost because of investing in high yields. Could you go over that for me again? Because I need some clarity around that because of the amount of discussion that took place in 95 and 95.
Yeah. So when the assets came to UBS, and we'd have to be a little bit more forensic in getting a real number, because when the assets came in, there were some funds, mutual funds, that invested in a variety of things, including high yield, and those were liquid, so they weren't in the portfolio once they got the UBS. So all I was referencing with that comment, this is David Sears, UBS, by the way, was if we were to assume, and also when the assets came in, there was a maturity that was beyond 5 years or duration. So the portfolio was closer aligned to the Barclays aggregate bond index.
You look on the source, it's about four down, that's down negative 1.47. We went against what that policy looked like and what that portfolio looked like, and then we have to go back and look at it. Potentially you would have lost negative 1.47, not in real dollars, but on the market value of the bonds.
So when I made that comment, I was just basically dividing the 0.35 into the 1.47. And then just said, you know, in dollar terms, it would have been multiplied by that many times.
Four times sounds like a lot more money than the 1.47, and I'll do this, I've been at this for 35 years. When I ran municipal money in this business, money markets were 3 to 5%, right? So four times loss would have been much worse at that point. So what we're doing with this portfolio is if and when interest rates start to rise, and we believe they're going to start pretty soon, we have to be very careful, because what happened in 2013 could have to the portfolio going forward, but we're too far out on maturity at this point.
Mr. Grimaldi.
One of the high yield funds that we liquidated, if you look at it now, it's trading at its lowest level ever in the history of the fund. And we liquidated probably at the top So there's a clear benefit to making it a revenue.
Thank you.
Any further questions from any members of council? Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I've heard, and sort of novice at all this, but certainly understand what dollars and cents are and how critical it is to have transparency and everything, but what I've heard and what's been presented, I'm very impressed with. I think that there's a lot of checks and balances. There's the transparency, there's the availability of reporting, and to take a look at any given time as to exactly where this county is. And I guess the question that I have would be of the auditor, is that from the standpoint of what our auditors heard today, what's his comfort level as far as being an auditor and being from the financial world, sort of, you know, what's been presented and hopefully the transparency and the checks and balances. What sort of feeling does our auditor have since he works entirely for the whole county? So
I know it's been kind of a whirlwind presentation, but would you like to respond?
I have no comment this time.
Okay.
It's a little disappointing for me to hear that there's no comment, because this council and its government is very transparent. So I'm a little disappointed in that.
Just
a minute, because you yielded. You said you didn't have any comment. You know, I would think that just based upon the information, just a comment to say that, you know, I've sat here, I've listened, and it certainly sounds like this is a viable solution, some of the problems passed and whatnot. But so I'm a little disappointed in that.
Well,
and now the auditor can speak.
Okay, wait a minute. For me, there's things in here that myself, although I'm not an auditor, they've put this together, they've presented it to us. But that doesn't mean, as co-chair of finance, I don't think I have a responsibility to go online and research some of this myself for me to make a responsible evaluation. But Mr. Wasserbach, yeah.
No, I'm very pleased that UBS is here today making this presentation. I mean, it's the first time since Michael Strong was here back in 2005 that there's been a presentation. It was an excellent presentation. There was a presentation on the county investments. So I'm glad to see they're going to be coming quarterly, and we're going to have transparency. I mean, I'm excited about it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anything from any other members of council? Anything from the public? Anything from the Attorney General's office? No. That was for me, not you. Councilman Cartier.
No, I don't have any further comments, but I have something under other.
Okay. Well, we've got grants and all to get to first.
Okay.
Okay.
We're available also. I know you should work with the finance fund. If you have any question on something, you're welcome to give us a call. If you guys individually want our cell phone numbers, you're welcome to have it. Questions, we'll
We look forward to the I's dotted, the T's crossed, and hearing that there is a contract. Of course, right now you're living under the proverbial county synonym acting. So you've been acting for a while, so you do pretty good acting. Let's see what we do when we get to it. So look forward to the contract being done, and I thank you very much for coming in. And I'm sure it wasn't as bad as you were told it would be.
Hey, what's happening?
Okay. Move forward now. Next on the agenda. If I can find out what I did with mine. There we go. Okay, next we're going to Newcastle County grant requests and community events. First on the agenda, breaking barriers. President Bullock and Councilman Street.
Mr. Chairman, Breaking Bears is a community, as I understand it, exercise. Oh,
excuse me a second. Let me officially get on the record that Councilman Tackett has joined us. I wasn't sure whether I did that during the meeting or not. He's been here a while. Okay.
It's always best
just want to make sure.
This is a group that's asking for $1,500 toward purchasing more equipment. It's a kind of a gymnasium, educational, holistic, comprehensive approach to wellness. I'm committed to giving $250. The Councilman Street is not here. I don't know if his aide is here.
She's out.
But I will. But I'll make the request on his behalf in form of a motion.
I'll second.
So the motion is for
$1,250.
Okay. There's a motion. There's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Not voting. Next on the agenda, Wilmington J.C.'s Christmas Parade.
Thank you,
President Bullock.
Mr. Chairman, again, it's the time of year where the parade is coming. I make a motion for $1,500 toward the float and entertainment for any council member that wants to join on that day.
I'd like to seek clarification just so we're clear. Are you planning on taking this $1,500 from your account or from the umbrella account?
Umbrella.
Which was the purpose?
Umbrella.
Okay.
We set that up last year, I think.
Yes.
Because other years haven't we given $1,300 or $100 from each account?
We have done that periodically. We didn't have that
umbrella account.
That was one of the reasons for the account, because if you recall, just so we know, last year it came in, there was a rush, we couldn't get anything done with it, there wasn't an account set up to where that could be done, and I'm, you know, so that's where we are. So this is from the
$1,500.
Okay.
From community events.
I'll make the motion to that effect.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion for $1,500 to the Wilmington J.C.'s Christmas Parade from the community events account. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Not voting. Events account. Let me make myself a note. Thank you. Next, we have the Brandywine High School Senior Prom Committee for 2016. Councilman Weiner.
The label for Bob Weiner, this application has been withdrawn, sir.
Withdrawn?
Yes, sir.
Got a trip.
Is that what it said?
Okay, next on the agenda is the Jester Art Space Incorporated. Councilman Weiner.
Yes, sir. The label for Councilman Weiner. This grant is being submitted to ask for a space in conjunction with a rehabilitation of the Jester Farmhouse, which at one time was part of the Newcastle County Resident Curatorship Program, in an effort to try and rehabilitate some properties that were Newcastle County under Newcastle County ownership without using any of Newcastle County's funds. And in this effort, Jester Art Space is intending to turn this dilapidated building into a community meeting place for art events and for art and for teaching art through that. And in doing so, this is just basically kind of seed money to get this all started, and they're hoping to get some additional funding for the project later on through federal and state grants if possible. But in the interim, they're asking for this amount so they can go ahead and proceed and get this all started. And so if I can get a council member on behalf of Council Weiner.
Question, if I may.
Yes.
So this is not part of the curatorship program?
No, it's not.
Okay. Because that was very specific, that they had to go through financial checks and everything else and had the wherewithal to be able to facilitate the upgrades.
Right.
This is not
through that program. This is just in conjunction with the use of the building with the permission of Newcastle County through a special services private lease that will eventually hopefully be signed once things get to fruition.
All right. We have a motion for Jester Art Space Incorporated to receive $1,000 from Councilman Weiner's grant account. Is there a motion to increase that? Oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
Did you make the motion?
Yeah, that's the motion.
Second.
There's a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Not voting.
Thank you, sir. On behalf of the councilman, he thanks you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay. Is there anything under the expense and revenue roundtable at this time? Under other, Councilman Cartier.
This could be expense and revenue roundtable.
Well, let's go to other. That way, we don't have anything left on the agenda.
I received a email communication from a member of the Brandywine School District Board talking about the ongoing problem we're having with the Board of Assessment, where we've got all these appeals coming in. And he drew my attention to the fact that the AstraZeneca Board of Assessment appeal is going to cost the Brandywine School District $2 million. Bearing in mind that the school districts get about 70% of the local property tax bill, they certainly are going to suffer. And it will impact us as well. So we have a number of these sites, not only the Brandywine 100, but this is going to be an ongoing cascading situation. I have a dead steel mill site. I'm going to pretty soon have a closed pigment site in Edgemore. And his question to me was, what can be done? Can the school district launch an appeal at the Board of Assessment on lowering an assessment? I look at this as a pretty galactic problem. And I don't know if anybody has any ideas from finance or what we should be looking at. I know the Board of Assessment is probably one of those boards that's going to has real critical bearing on our revenue sources. And, I don't know if we should really be really taking a hard look at it and seeing what we can do. So
I think our auditor may have some input. I'm sorry, Councilman Hollins first.
Thank you. Now, this issue has come up time and again, and the city also has a similar concern, and now the city has a person that's at every one of the meetings, and it's been a discussion for at least the last couple of years, but I would think that the Brandywine School District, Colonial, whatever school district can have someone. These are public meetings.
Yes.
At these meetings to state their position and what they feel about it. But if you're going to not participate in the process, at least that's the start, that's the beginning. So anyone is welcome to take part in the process, but I know the city actually has someone that they paid to be there, and what we've been told is that there is an attorney that, for the most part, is looking for clients, and he's making a practice out of challenging these assessments. So the other thing we talked about was having people on the board that are more familiar with assessment values, and I think that that's where we can make certain that we have people there when we get an opportunity that they are somewhat familiar with the assessment process. And there are some people in Newcastle County with that kind of a background who would like to serve on the board. We don't want to have to come off if we feel that they don't have those qualifications, but there are some people, a couple of people that I know, that would like to serve on the board.
I'm Mike, Ed Danberg, special counsel. I used to represent the board. I used to make presentations before the board, so a little bit of background on this. And it's a countywide problem, everything from Chrysler going, leaving to AstraZeneca. Virtually every building in the city of Wilmington has been assessed downward over the, if not one, not two times or three times over the last few years. You have a real problem. And the county can't appeal from the board. If we get an adverse decision, the county has no appeal.
Right.
But the school district may well have the right to appeal. That's something that ought to be addressed with the school district. Because they're not... they are not prohibited, as I understand it, the Supreme Court's ruling from filing.
Councilman Cartier.
What's the nature of the appellate process for school districts on decisions?
Well, it's the same as the as anyone else. It's a certiorari appeal to Superior Court. Go through a briefing process, typically. It's usually a question of law, whether it is a question of fact. that's decided by the courts, but the basic problem that the board has, and I think that it's going to continue to be there, is that the appellant comes in and they bring an appraiser, a certified appraiser who's prepared a, an interest-like report.
Yep.
The county has their appraisal staff there, and it's kind of it's a difficult situation to win as a lawyer. I've been on the losing side of a couple of them, and that's not everything. Yeah.
Okay. Councilman Carney.
Just finally, I guess based on what I've heard, could you please compose a little email, send it to me about the appellate process for school districts, and so I can forward it over to the board of the Bangalore School District. And to go to Councilman Holland's point, they're just going to have to start attending the meetings and presenting their case, you know.
Okay, and I just don't want to hear an issue at the next meeting, so everyone heard Councilman Carney ask Mr. Danberg to do something for him, right? We're okay with that. Betsy, you okay? Okay, we'll have to run that through Betsy to make sure that you can get that. That's what council decided, so let's cover your butt.
Is that on the list?
Yeah. Mr. Guy.
Yes, Sam Guy, Deputy CAO. If you took everything that you just said, the city of Wilmington had that exact same concern. So it would probably be worthwhile for you to forward that the person's contact information to us. And the DMD, so that we can get them tied in to facilitate them being able to do what others do. And then also they'll be at the table for figuring out how to deal with the big picture problem that may require adult action by Dover. But if the school districts start to step forward and feel they're going to be stepped on, that may get some movement. They won't change anything for county government.
And I'm glad to see the open communication from the school districts, because I look forward to them contacting me when the next tax bills come out and they ask me if they can come to the community meetings and explain their part of the bill. But I don't think there'll be any volunteering coming forward on that issue. But maybe I'll draft them. Okay. Okay, that's it. Under other, we now have public comment. Or do you have anything? You good? Okay. Anything under public comment? Anything else under other? Can I get a motion?
Motion.
Second. Okay, we have a motion to adjourn. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Anybody not voting? Thank you very much.